Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is November 10th, Wednesday. We'll publish November 11th, Thursday. This is John Titus and Catherine Fitz. And I don't know, you can't say it's amazing every week, but my uncle used to say stupefying. It's getting more stupefying. Yeah. Okay.
It's a sustained state of amazement.
So we have a theme. Tell us our theme.
The theme is central bank control grid construction has begun.
Right. Yeah. Right. There's so many different stories from all around the world. And the thing that connects them all is they're pouring a huge amount of money, of central bank money and printed money and taxes, into building out the control grid. And
yes,
you know,
and they have the plans are even bigger than the current spending proposals.
Oh yeah. Okay. $150 trillion worth, led by your best friend Mark Carney.
Well, he's dialed that back to 120 now, so let's be fair.
Oh really? Well, he dialed it to 130, so now he's at 120?
I can't remember. He's all over the board. Anyway.
Okay.
How many digits is that? That's 12, 13, 14, 14 digits?
Is it? Wait a minute.
We need exponents to keep track of the digits.
Wait a minute. That's a billion, so it's a trillion. So it's 3, 6,
trillion's
9, 12, 13.
14.
No.
One trillion.
I'm thinking 1 trillion is 13. You're thinking 120 is 15. What?
Anyway, it is. It's a lot of digits. It's too many digits for us to keep track of. We can't even count them.
Farmageddon. Let's dive in.
Farmageddon. Let's hit it. Right out of the gate, the propaganda is over the top. This is from Celia Farber's Substack. Propaganda goes next level. Pfizer's new ad campaign uses children to sell vaccines as chance to be superheroes. I'm going to roll a little bit of this video against my better judgment, but hopefully you can hear it.
Getting ready to fight COVID.
Yep.
All of us want to be superheroes. The most important heroes are those that help others. This year, thousands of kids like us around the world joined the COVID-19 vaccine trial.
Kid power.
And when they did, they became all superheroes. Ah! To all the kids who volunteered.
Okay, that's as much as I can manage in terms of kid propaganda, but you can hear the kid has a lisp and very, you know, slight speech impediment, but selling these vaccines to kids in an all-out effort to just inject everybody in the planet. That's disgusting.
And it's the same time the British Medical Journal comes out with the whistleblower saying, you know, they completely cooked and lied about the trials.
Absolutely.
So their approval was based on, totally fraudulent information.
And that Pfizer Superheroes campaign is coming out at the same time that Sesame Street, I had sent you the video with Sesame Street.
Right.
Also pushing the vaccines, they've woven it into their narrative. It's not just an ad. It's like part of the show, like, oh, I'm going to get my first COVID shot. And the parents are like, yeah, you got to be healthy. It's out of control, the propaganda.
Well, I think I sent you the story. Burlow was quoted as saying people who spread information about vaccine information, you know, should be charged with a criminal offense. So he sounded scared.
Yeah, that's an odd statement coming from a guy whose company is the biggest criminal in history,
right,
in world history.
On record.
$2.3 billion they paid.
Right.
They admitted their crimes. Pfizer is a criminal enterprise. It's undisputed. Not even Borla could dispute that. That's
well, it's interesting because I told you when I read Empire Pain, the book on the Sacklers and the opioid crisis, it turns out the grandfather had an advertising agency, and what he did was fraudulent marketing for Pfizer. And there's story after story after story, and you realize this has been going on for generations.
That's what they got nailed for back in 2009. The FDA said, hey, you know, this drug you're working on, it's for purposes X, Y, and Z. Don't go out and market it as solving problems A, B, and C. And what did Pfizer do? They went out and said, yeah, it's A, B, and C.
Right.
$2.3 billion. So for him to say that other people are criminal is just risible.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay, what's next?
By the way, we're going to see a story later about who the demographically the injections are directed to in terms of age groups. It's a weird split. We'll get back to that. But kids are half of the split. But let's keep it going. When Farmageddon, here we go. This is from Mark Skidmore. Some of the many reports of athletes and children injured, dying of heart-related problems. This is on his website, Lighthouse Economics. And what he's done, he starts out, he's got a video here. He's got another one here talking about what can happen to your heart following the COVID injection. I'm not going to play it. But what Skidmore has done, the real value here, is he's just compiled. He's just assembled a compendium of athletes who've collapsed or had serious heart problems on the heels of getting injected. So these are top-notch athletes.
Right.
So you have this guy Dembele, he's a Madrid striker, collapses in training, requires medical attention. Apolinario, 24, another young guy, even younger Brazilian soccer player, dies after collapsing on a pitch during a match. And just on and on and on. 19, 36, the ages, referee collapses.
Right, and these are people in absolutely superb physical condition. Well, he also linked to a whole bunch of other collections and compendiums. And I'll tell you how this happened. Mark and I were on a Doctors for COVID Ethics call last week, and one of the sons of one of the members got on and said, you know, we need celebrities telling us it's a bad idea to get the shot because all the young people think it's a great idea to get the shot. What can you do to help? And so one of the things we started to talk about was how many famous sports players have been sidelined by adverse events or death. And so one thing led to another, and we talked about, okay, let's bring together a collection. And so people started to collect up all the links. And there's a collection at American Vagabond. There's a collection at Reddit, you know, and I think Mark links to all of them. But, you know, we're now talking about scores and scores and scores and scores of people. It's pretty obvious.
And, yeah, scroll through. Dozens.
If you have a young person in your family, definitely check them out and get them to start looking at that, because it's, I don't know, if that won't persuade you, I don't know what will.
Right. I mean, just to see it, and Skidmore's summary is really good because it's tight. It's one entry, you know, two or three lines, bam, move on.
Right.
So you can get the picture. You get the 40,000 foot view very quickly.
Right.
That piece. It's nice. Nice piece of
right.
work.
One of the things he links to, Patrick Byrne made a video, and it's just different soccer. It's different players on the field just dropping, just collapsing. Boom. All of a sudden.
Wow. I've seen a couple of those.
Yeah.
But you're saying there's a reel of like the highlight reel of people dropping as playing.
I think it's only about three or four, but it's very impactful because you just see one after another, and it's.
Right.
You know, and you see,
three or
you
four
see
is
how,
a huge number.
Right. You see how healthy these guys are and how unexpected it is.
If it's one, you could say, well, it's, you know, one in a billion, right? If it's two or three or four, that excuse has just left the station. Doesn't work.
Right. Mercola came out this morning with an article, and, you know, these articles only stay on Mercola's site for 48 hours. But the headline was, the vaxxed are six times likely to die as the unvaxxed. So if you just look at the death count, it's much more significant vaxxed.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Well,
I'm waiting
to get the videos. One of my subscribers contacted me and just said, one of the Austrian parliamentarians came out and said, this is a calling of the population. It's intentional.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I'm waiting to get it. We'll see if I...
I'm starting to come around to that based on the financial situation of the U.S. It should be the monetary situation of the U.S., but we allow our money to be printed by a private organization. Now we have a debt problem. That's a financial problem.
Right. No.
It would help if you got rid of people who are heavily taxing the system, namely the aged and infirmed.
Right. Exactly. I was kind of on the fence until I saw the 5% article. And that was the thing that really put me over the top. So, yeah, I think it's an intentional genocide. So on that positive note,
let's keep it rolling.
Let's keep it rolling.
Here we go. Next story. Surgeon who operated on young Italian vaccine victim. You have never seen anything like this. The surgeon's name is, let's call him Dr. Zana. Not going to wrestle with that first name. Director of Neurosurgical and Neurotraumatological Clinic of the San Martino Hospital. I have never seen a brain that was affected by such an extensive and severe thrombosis. We decided to have decompression craniotomy in which the skull is open to relieve internal pressure. So the skull gets open. What does he see inside? All venous sinuses were blocked with thrombi, a scenario I have never seen in my many years in this profession. Think of the venous sinus as the river in the middle of the valley where several streams converge. If a dam is built in the middle of the watercourse, the river swells and the tributaries can no longer drain at this point so that the pressure rises upstream. The victim in this case was Camila Canepa, the 18-year-old who died after the vaccine, in case there was any doubt. But there she is. That is just absolutely
so
disgusting, tragic.
Here's why I thought this story was very important. What I'm told by the doctors and scientists that I spend the most time listening to is that some of the most useful reports are from pathologists. Now, I appreciate that this is not a pathology report, but it was the moment at which they realized there was nothing they could do, essentially. And it's equivalent, or it's near equivalent to, in my mind as a layman, to a pathology report. And what it shows is a bad case of the spike protein throwing off blood clots to the point where the body can no longer handle them. And that's part of what's happening. You have two fact patterns. One is the spike protein throws off the blood clots. You die of a heart attack or stroke in the first, or thrombosis in the first, period. If you make it through that period, you get an immunosuppression. Your immune system drops down, and then whatever your weakness is kills you. So you get fast acting cancer. You get, whatever. So this
the double whammy is right. The theory. So in other words, when the first thing is you're basically lining your veins with barbed wire and inviting things to get stuck on the barbs and get clotted.
Right.
That's
right.
Problem number one. And then the second part of the double whammy is your immune system is compromised.
Right.
Real nice.
Right.
Okay. On that cheery note, let's go to the next Farmageddon story. Here we go. This is what I was talking about earlier.
Right.
Exposed. Inhumane, lethal COVID protocols in hospital. But what are they talking about? In many hospitals, COVID patients are treated little better than animals. This gets me. I want to zoom in on this. Shocking recordings of Mayo Clinic Scottsdale and Banner Health System hospital executives have been released by an attorney on the Legal Advisory Council of Truth for Health Foundation, an Arizona public charity. Executives were discussing coordinated efforts to restrict fluids and nutrition for hospitalized COVID patients and to suppress all visitations for COVID patients.
Right.
Okay. So this, you could see here, this COVID protocol is called Complete Live System. It was developed by Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel for rationing medical care for people older than 50. When implemented, the Complete Live Systems produces a priority curve on which individuals aged between, and here's the bimodal distribution. So the system focuses on individuals aged between roughly 15 and 40 years. They get the most substantial chance, whereas the youngest and oldest people get chances that are attenuated. And you can see here, attenuated means rationed, restricted, or denied medical care that commonly leads to premature death. So
right.
The upshot is that the people in the middle from 15 to 40, they're getting regular care.
Right.
But younger than 15 and older than 40, the care is rationed.
Right.
That's incredible.
Well, the 15 to 40 plus is generating, is generating receipts for the tax system. The other two are taking it out.
Although historically, the earners in the system are, I think it's as categorized by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is 25 to 54.
Right. So
they always have the highest participation rate in the economy. Always.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. But what you're doing is the people are going to cost you a lot of money to either educate before they start being earners, or the people who are, you know, leaving the workforce and ready to draw on healthcare and retirement, those are the ones you're restricting.
Yeah.
But if you look at the patterns that we've seen all around the world, and you and I have discussed them, you know, we are seeing again and again places where the hospitals are literally killing people early.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. That we've been onto this for over a year now.
Right.
It's like, well,
I have reports from subscribers that describe two fact patterns. One is the staff is great and really helpful, and it's like hospitals 20 years ago. And the other is they're there to kill you. It's dangerous.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. Keep it rolling here. The next story. This is from AP News. Very interesting story. Thousands of Intel officers refusing vaccine risk dismissal. Oh, sorry. Let me read that again. I totally botched the intonation of that. Thousands of Intel officers refusing vaccine risk dismissal.
Right.
So they're not taking, so a certain percentage of intelligence officers aren't going to take their vaccine. Several, and here they get into the numbers, which is kind of interesting because there's a contradiction. Several intelligence agencies had at least 20% of their workforce unvaccinated as of late October, said U.S. Representative Chris Stewart, a Utah Republican, who was a member of the House Intelligence Committee. Some agencies in the 18-member intelligence community had as much as 40% of their workforce unvaccinated. So, like, which is it? Is it 20%?
ONI is at least 40% unvaccinated.
You know what I mean? It's like, so here it's 20%, and down here it goes to 40%. I don't understand it. Anyway, intelligence
so
officers.
So I don't want national security run by the 60%. I'll tell you that.
Right. So right. Here they talk about the intelligence officers. They're hard to replace due to highly specialized work they do and the difficulties of completing security clearance checks. The officer of the Director of National Intelligence declined several requests to provide figures for the intelligence community. The office also would not say what contingency plans are in place in case officers are taken off work due to not complying with the mandate. It's like, well, are you saying you're not going to have enough intelligence officers to perform the functions of the agencies?
Well,
I mean, either you're endangering the U.S. or you're unnecessary, which is it?
Right. Well, if you look at both the military and the intelligence and how many people they would indicate by their policies they're going to fire, I don't see how you don't have significant harm to national security.
Right. Right. As you and I discussed, though, this could be a way. And this doesn't apply just to intelligence agencies, for organizations to sort of have mass layoffs under the rubric of a
pandemic.
Right.
This is absolutely a mass budget cut.
Yeah.
They're just saying, get rid of 20 to 25% of the workforce across the board.
Right.
And they know that the people close to retirement are going to be a very large component of that basket that refuses to take it. And that's their biggest savings.
Yeah. In every organization I've ever worked for, you know, restaurant, you know, space industry, law firm, whatever, there's always, there's the rule, but then there's the decision makers to trump the rule and say, well, you know, it's a rule, but in your case, you know, it doesn't apply to you.
Right.
That's going on everywhere, I'm sure.
Right.
I've never worked at a place where that hasn't been the case.
Right. Well, what this tells you is the economy is very fragile.
Why would you infer that?
Well, because they need to make massive budget cuts, but they can't call it budget cuts.
Wow.
Right. I would say this is desperation mode budget cuts.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. It's a lot. A lot of this is coming from U.S. debt.
Right.
U.S., we're at a dangerous point, and we're trying to navigate tricky waters. So you cut too many people, you're going to cut tax revenue.
Right.
Right. But you have to cut some because companies have to remain profitable. They're not going to make anything for you if they're bankrupt.
Right.
So it's a dicey situation I think the U.S. is in right now. This is a dangerous time we live in.
But it's a very dangerous time. But if you Remember, if you bankrupt the small guys and let the big guys pick up the market share, you're going to get a pickup in certain ways for, you know, for a temporary. Now, that's not true for state and local. State and local are going to really suffer.
Yeah. One right. A pickup, you're certainly going to get a pickup in control.
Right.
You know, the hoovering up of control in a fewer and fewer hands. Anyway, next story is about our favorite governor in the whole universe. Not maybe our second favorite governor, if we consider Mark Carney a governor. This is a state governor, though. Governor Newsom. This is from The Defender. Injured by a Moderna booster shot, source tells The Defender. So there he is getting his shot, his booster, supposedly. And then he just vanishes. And he's been gone since, I think, October 27th or whatever. Yeah, down here, October 27th. You see that? Anyway, the problem is, though, just last night I found this where here's Gavin. This is a story from KCR-TV, NBC affiliate. Governor Newsom says he skipped climate change summit to spend Halloween with family. So I don't buy it.
I do not buy it.
You don't think so?
There's something up, and I don't know what it is, but there's definitely something. You don't, if you're Newsom, you don't just skip COP26. You don't do that.
And it's okay. So there's a double whammy there. He skipped it in person. He was supposed to go in person. He canceled. Okay, so go do it virtually, guy. And he didn't do it virtually.
He didn't
either.
Do it virtually. So something
that's the big red flag.
Right, something's definitely up. And if you look at how hard they're trying to prove that he's fine, all of a sudden, I don't buy it.
Yeah, it's the first attempt was, oh, he was seen at a wedding, and they show you these photographs of the wedding. It's like, here's a picture of the bride and groom, with a telephoto lens, and they're in the foreground, and there's Gavin way in the back, but he's blurry,
right?
And he's got a mask on.
So the other thing is, I just got, somebody sent me a headline, and I haven't had a chance to read the story, that the U.S. and Moderna are now fighting about patent rights.
And Moderna and the U.S.?
Yeah. The company Moderna and the U.S. are now in the middle of a patent squabble. And it just so happens that Newsom got the Moderna shot. Could be a coincidence. So,
well, let me tell you this about patent litigation, because I've done it for 25 years. I'm doing it right now. Patent litigation is it's a form of gambling between corporations. You know, so Dow versus Exxon, you know, J&J versus Procter & Gamble.
Right.
That's just a white collar dice game in the alley. Right. You know, they're just playing for a few bucks, a few hundred million bucks. They don't care. It's just a way to sort of. I'm convinced it's just a form of entertainment for the companies. They're just going to keep getting their patents and keep doing their things. They're all owned by BlackRock and State Street and Vanguard anyway.
But this is the U.S. and Moderna fighting. And I haven't had a chance to look at the story, but given all the sort of rumors and allegations right now swarming around Moderna, because I expect somebody to pick Moderna up cheap at some point. I think Moderna's in play.
Hmm.
So
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. The litigation, that's an interesting theory, because one, the sword of Damocles, which is really more than the sword of Damocles in patent litigation, is you can get an injunction. And that's the danger of the litigation. It's not just a dice game in the alley. It's like, well, sometimes the stakes are knives, and you can lose and you can get shut down. Your product can get shut down. Right. That's typically hard, though, because a company would have so many patents. But if your product,
Moderna does not have a lot of patents.
The risk is it's not that they're patents. The risk for Moderna is that there's not a lot of products.
Right.
We shut this one product down, we're killing your golden goose. You're dead.
Well, unless somebody picks them up cheap and then it gets reversed.
Right.
Right.
Right. I would love to know who the counsel on that case are.
I don't know. There's some kind of game going on, and I haven't had time to dive in and figure out, but maybe I'll take some time.
I didn't know about
there.
It at all.
Yeah,
interesting.
There.
Very interesting. We'll have to follow that up. That's fascinating.
Okay,
next story. This one's just as fascinating. Wow. Travis Scott's Astroworld concert pauses and then restarts amid deaths and injuries. And this story is from Reuters. I just want to kind of... go through the timeline here. Disaster struck during his headline performance, as over the course of the Grammy Award-winning rapper's 90-minute show, at least 8 of the 50,000 attendees died, and many more were injured. As fans surged toward the stage, okay? But here's the interesting thing about the sequence of how this happened. Let me zoom in and see if I can get this whole part in. Okay, close enough. At around the half-hour mark in the footage uploaded to YouTube, Scott pauses the show for the first time. There's an ambulance in the whoa, he said. In an aerial shot, the white top of what appears to be an emergency vehicle could be seen swallowed up in the crowd. Okay, so you had an ambulance show up. He stops singing, whatever. Moments later, he continues the show, re-energizing the audience. Two hands in the sky. I want to make the ground shake. And then 15 minutes later, he stops the show again. So it's stopping it a second time. We need somebody to help. Somebody passed out right here. Don't touch him. Everybody just back up. Security, somebody help. Jump in real quick, Scott calls out as yellow clads. And then the show continues moments later. I just, like, what in the Sam Hill is going on at that show?
There are a couple of thoughts I have. That would be in keeping with a whole bunch of kids who got vaccinated were really exerting themselves and were suffering from myocarditis and didn't realize it. Okay? But another thing, I got a social media forward, and I haven't posted it because I have no way of confirming it, but it was from a mother who said her son was there, and when the crowd got excited, kids started having seizures. And her son just turned and got out of there as fast as possible. And I just want to, you know, who knows what that might have been, but I just want to, you know, I always try and get subscribers to watch The Kingsman and to understand if you see whether violence break out or, you know, sort of that kind of physically incoherent behavior, get the hell out as fast as possible. And whatever you do, turn, if you have a smartphone, turn it off, you know, or throw it away permanently. But the danger that it's something that's triggered with EMF is very real. So be careful.
You don't think that's the last time we see a story like that?
No, I think we're going to see more and more of those stories. More and more and more. And in part because whatever materials they're putting in our bodies, whether it's through injections or spray or food, I think they're prototyping how to use the, you know, the cellular communication to manipulate people and their behavior. So, you know, they've just started to roll out these injections. So the prototyping of crowd manipulation is underway and it's got years to go.
I mean, I can tell. I hung out with a stand-up comedian, best friend of mine for 10 years. They don't stop shows. I mean, to stop a show is a highly exceptional thing. And he just stopped it twice.
Right.
Like, what is going on in that story? Something serious went down for that to happen. And that's a big show, 50,000 people.
Right.
Man. Anyway. Okay.
You know, and I want to be careful how I describe this, but I've had reports of people who, after both the first and the second vaccination, had literally Manchurian candidate experiences where, you know, suddenly they're in a place and, you know, 1 or 2 days later, they come back to consciousness and they have no idea where they've been or what they've done. And for that 1 or 2 days, to the extent that anybody can figure out what they've done, you know, it's completely out of character. Now, that's a very typical. If you've ever watched Telephone with Charles Bronson, you'll see the fact pattern. But, you know, it's remarkable that it would just happen after one or two injections.
That is. That's astonishing.
Right.
A weird story. Anyway, to shift gears, though, we need to go to FedWatch. FedWatch. FedWatch, all too tellingly, begins in China. This is interesting. China, and by the way, so let me just say this. You just saw the highlighting tool was working. That's Firefox. I just upgraded my Mac to Yosemite, and Firefox is fine. The highlighting tool is great. My highlighting tool, though, after the upgrade to Yosemite in Safari is gone. So I've got I've got to. I have notes on what to look at in the story. It's just, I'm tired of Safari. I need another browser. Anyway, here we go. China urges families to keep stores of daily needs ahead of winter.
Right.
And they sort of give it away here. Like, what are the needs? The needs are right here. They're food. But that's down in the first paragraph. They say, the government strives to ensure sufficient food supplies heading into winter. And that's really what this is all about. But the story doesn't make sense as usual. Urge local authorities do a good job ensuring food supply and stable prices. We've had unusually heavy rains in China have caused vegetable prices to surge, fueling concern over food prices and worrying government officials in Beijing. So they I don't know how telling people.
So you know what this says to me?
We're out of vegetables. Go buy a ton of food.
No, I think they're concerned about economic warfare. And that economic warfare causing a sudden hiccup in the food supply, and they want everybody to have more inventory.
Well, that makes sense. In other words, if you leave it on the shelves, it's going to spoil. At least at home, someone's house has got a chance to be frozen.
Right, but I think they want people to just have more inventory because if they get hiccuped by external forces, that will protect them politically. You know, if people have a 2-day supply, they get an economic warfare hiccup, you know, out of the box and suddenly nobody has food. They've got a super duper political problem. If everybody's got 2 or 3 weeks, they're protected. So I think they're worried about increasing individual resilience because they know they're facing scenarios where they may not be able to step in the breach.
Interesting. I'm just thinking, I got to go. I don't have 2 or 3 weeks of food at my house. I got
to
change.
So I'll never forget one of the great quotes. I had to go back to one of the old wrap-ups and find it. But a Chinese politician was asked about, wasn't he worried about the latest dive? You know, there's a huge dive in the stock market. He said, no, we don't worry about the stock market. We worry about the price of pork.
No kidding.
Right. Right.
Wow. Right. Wow. Very, very interesting that. Okay, continuing on in Fed Watch, next more classic Fed Watch story from the Wall Street Journal. Fed dials back bond purchases, plots end to stimulus by June. I will take the over on that. I don't think it's going to end by June. But anyway, let me see if I can find. Here you go. Second paragraph. Fed officials are going to wind down. Right now, it's $120, $120 billion a month. And they're going to wind it down $15 billion in November, so down to 105. And then again in December, so down to 90. And they continue this pace that would end the purchases by next June. So there you have it. There's the plan right there. You can place your bets on whether that's going to happen.
So when we show the inflation chart, the VIX says that they assume if the stock market drops 1%, they'll reverse.
Yeah.
You know, so nobody believes it, right?
I don't think anybody believes it. Here's the thing.
If they do it, given the pain that's happening to the middle class in America, you know, that there is a punch underway from the debt situation to the American people, and if the Fed really does this, that punch is going to get much tougher.
Yeah, right. We'll see whether they dial it back. I mean, you know, I'm very skeptical. I just think something's going to come up they have to keep inflating.
Well, let me ask you this: if they were trying to force everybody onto a universal basic income, could that be a way?
Yes, that could be. And in fact, you and I yesterday, when we were talking about this, looked at the daily Treasury summary.
Right.
You know, I went to the website, and it's sitting at $250 billion. We'll get to the money that's in that in a minute. But when that's out, the question is what happens? Because right now you're seeing inflation is in place, okay? And you're seeing the net wealth go up for across the board, regardless of income level. On the one hand, you're starting to see stories of like MSNBC coming out with a tweet saying his inflation is good and having to delete it because the outrage was so huge, so massive.
Right.
So there's a lot of pain out there. And you're right. I think ultimately they're going to try to get people on universal basic income. And the pathway for that is becoming clearer and clearer for how that might happen. Right. You get inflation going on the one hand, and then you pull away the punch bowl from the bottom 50% of society, say, on the other hand.
I don't know how many people you think you lay off with the mandates, but you lay off a significant number of people, and you've already shut down a huge amount of small business.
Right.
So now if you with increased food prices, then if you take up interest rates on top of it,
right,
you know, then the pain really goes off the charts.
The interest rates, I don't think you're going to see. I would bet heavy against interest rate rise.
You would bet heavy against interest rate rise on treasury bills, but don't bet against interest rate rise on consumer credit cards.
Oh, absolutely not. I would bet on interest rate rise and consumer credit. Yes.
Right. We have subscribers reporting, you know, they're all getting notifications that their APR is going up on their credit card. So it's definitely happening.
Yeah, right. I can find that completely believable. But I think that, one of the things with the layoffs, back to the layoffs, you brought that up. You notice that you get more and more layoff stories. It's like, yeah, you got laid off when you took your pension. So again, it's the cost cutting.
Right.
It's like, we got rid of you and we don't have to pay out your pension. Isn't that great?
Right.
Because you willfully refuse to take the vaccine.
Right.
There's a lot at work here. There's a lot of moving parts in what's happening.
Right.
And it becomes clearer as time goes on. But anyway, let's go on to our next story. The next one's from your new favorite law professor from Cornell, Sala Omarova, who I may have to do a revised story on her, given what I've seen. Biden nominee Omarova called the banks she would supervise the quintessential a-hole industry in a 2019 feature documentary, and she uses the term a bunch of times. The Martins seem to be somewhat disturbed by the fact that she uses the term, so she doesn't flinch when she says it. But I want to look at the second bullet point here, because this is disturbing. The Martins are here summarizing a paper Omarova wrote in October, meaning last month.
You have to read this paper, John. You have to read
this,
it.
This is the part that I find really, really disturbing. Allowing the Fed in extreme and rare circumstances, when the Fed is unable to control inflation by raising interest rates, and that's the end of the quote. So I will have to read it, because I trust the Martins on the quote. I don't trust anybody to summarize this. To confiscate deposits from these Fed accounts in order to tighten monetary policy. Let me tell you why that is so horrifying, aside from the obvious reason. I mean, they confiscate your money. But the whole thing with QE during the pandemic has been the Fed is expanding the retail money supply. It is able to do this to force the creation of credit in the commercial banking industry. So in other words, the Fed can create inflation just by the way in which it purchases assets for its balance sheet, okay? And it can expand the retail money supply that way. What she's saying then is the Fed can then offset that part out.
Right.
They can turn around and say, hey, what the hell? We've got too much inflation. We need to confiscate deposits.
Right. So
is this woman totally deranged?
Oh, it's much worse than that. You have to read it. So the way I read it was they don't confiscate, they freeze.
Okay, same deal. You're not getting your money.
Right. Exactly. But it's not your money, it's their money.
It never was your money.
So I print money, I give it to the private venture capital guys to go buy everything up. And to make sure the prices are cheaper, I just freeze your money. You know, on the theory that it's offsetting, it's creating deflation to offset the inflation I just created by printing money and give it to the private equity guys.
But it also means
you have to sell your real estate at 10 cents on the dollar to feed your kids.
Yeah, you know, that is a truly nefarious program.
Well, Well, but if you look at what they've done with the pandemic, all they're doing is creating a Fed machinery that can do the whole thing without bothering with the WHO or health officers or lies or anything else. They just put into place the financial transaction grid and proceed to do the same exact thing, just all through the bank accounts.
Right.
So right. They can destroy... Right. Well, yeah. Like this, they can destroy as many small businesses, as many families, and as many people as they want. Boom. No questions
okay,
asked.
So let me give your subscribers a sense for the numbers that start in play under this proposal. Okay. When the pandemic started, the retail monetary supply was sitting at, let's say, $16 trillion. That's electronic money in retail bank accounts and commercial banks. The Fed added, in between, say, 6 or 7 weeks, $3 trillion to the money supply, both in the reserve at the reserve level and in the retail level. So they, in other words, they expanded. They went from 15 to 18 in the retail circuit. And under this proposal, they would then turn around and freeze about $3 trillion.
Right.
So
it's a way of just taking $3 trillion from the general population and giving it to their pals.
Yes.
Right.
It's, yeah, but buying assets from their pals. But those assets, remember, a lot of them are mortgage-backed securities that are infected
right.
through with fraud.
Right. They infuse money into their pals, who are then free to go buy everything at a very advantageous right. way. Remember, if they infuse money into their pals would have to pay market price. But if they can freeze or pull your deposits, then yeah. you get smashed down and they get to pick things up for cheap. You know, pump and dump. They pump one side and dump the other side, so the pump has the advantage.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to.
Can I also just say one thing? Yeah. I have never lost my temper the way I did in the day that I read that law review article. So I don't know if you read my review. You know, but I use some scatological and pornographic expressions, which I never do on the Saleri Report. But it was the most, basically she's describing the implementation of a slavery system.
Yeah, you
have to read it.
Let's just go to the next piece, and I'll show you why I was initially kind of skeptical of like, Omar, is this really this bad?
Yeah,
so
it is.
This is a YouTube video. It's a clip from a YouTube video by a guy named Stephen Van Meter. And I've cited his work before. He's really good, okay? Van Meter is really good on bonds.
Mm-hmm.
On monetary plumbing, better be careful. And this is in the latter category. So I'm just going to play this.
One of her pieces that she wrote... And here you can see the proposal, Fed accounts as a tool of monetary policy. And you can also see somewhere in here, the People's Ledger and the Fed's balance sheet as a People's Ledger. And you can tell that she wants your money to be parked at the Fed. And that is not good.
Okay. So let me pause that real quick. The trouble is with this guy is that he's citing two different things. He's talking about the liability side, and he's talking about the asset side. And he's saying, oh, well, they're going to move the asset side to the Fed. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. He just doesn't know what he's talking about. So I was skeptical when I see videos like that. I'm like, you know, if you're not going to bother to learn what's going on, I'm just going to tune out when I hear stuff like that, you know? I'm just not going to take your word for it that she's in favor of this and she's in favor of that when you can't distinguish between the asset side and the liability side of a bank balance sheet. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, but what he did understand was that what she's proposing is 100% total Fed control of your account. Now, they divide your account up into two pieces, one of which theoretically can't be frozen. But, you know, if you can act and combine this with the equivalent of the vaccine passports, you've got complete control. And as you know, the BIS guy said, you know, we can make the rules and we can enforce.
Right. But the Martins had it. The Martins did it. They did a piece. They showed it in its true light by direct quotes. right? They were quoting right from it, not circling things or highlighting things in the cover page. They're out of order and in the wrong category. But anyway, for sure, I'm now going to go back and look at that piece. When is her hearing, by the way, Omarova's, for taking over?
I don't know.
The OCC,
I've already written,
you know?
in the comments on my rant about her at Solari, I put a copy of my letter to one of my senators is on the banking committee. So I wrote him a letter and said, you know, you better X this person. And I got a letter back. They're both posted there. But her hearing should be relatively soon. What's important when you read this, John, because this is the worst, I described it as the worst financial psychopathy I've ever read in my life, ever. And there's no way this person would be doing this unless she's running a trial balloon for, you know, some group more than herself. She's not just coming up with this on her own. But for Vanderbilt Law Review to publish this, I mean, I just can't believe they're publishing it, and then for her to be nominated for this. I mean, what it tells you is, I don't know, words fail me. You have to read it, because what it tells me is we have literally as a country lost our mind. We can't tell the difference between,
right,
you know, sound financing and, I mean, this is really, this is beyond Bolshevik. This is alien invasion financing. Do you know what I mean?
It's not that we've lost our mind. It's the sovereign monetary function has been taken over and was taken over a long time ago. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. And you've got a population, including senators and entire Congress, that is absolutely does not know what's going on in monetary terms. And the wool could be pulled over their eyes. And it is being pulled over their eyes.
I don't believe it, because this thing is so bad and so obviously bad. You know, it's going to put every small bank in America out of business or under their thumb.
You understand that, but the average senator, they don't get it. They don't understand reserves. They don't even know what it is.
You
got a guy in the bond market doesn't understand it.
But you got 5,000 community banks and credit unions who can understand every word of this.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, next story is from ABC News, India, UK, this is very interesting, to launch a global solar grid project at COP26. So you go to this and you say, well, what is going on here? I mean, so they're the project, and again, I don't have the ability to pre-highlight this because it's far. Anyway, they're going to try to connect countries in different parts of the world. Okay, that's the proposal. Something like countries in different parts. How are you talking about doing that? And if you go down, it's based on the idea that the sun is always shining in some part of the world. And the project aims to create a global grid that will transfer the sun's power from one place to another. Okay, sounds good. But how are you going to do that? I mean, how are you going to transfer heat across, you know, many continents? And then they say here, down here, they finally get to it. If the path between two countries, meaning an energy supplier and energy user, is impassable and the countries aren't stable, okay, so then that would be one challenge, okay? If the path between the countries, so they're talking about the physical path. In other cases, a longer cable or one that goes beneath the ocean would be required. And these factors would sharply increase the cost. Gee, you think? I mean, the audacity of that project is just breathtaking.
Well, I think COP26 was all about creating headlines, you know, and excitement. So this idea, one of the proposals was, you know, we need to spend $150 trillion. And then that dialed back, right. So you need all these grand ideas and grand plans. And you're talking about $150 trillion. And my interpretation, grossly oversimplified, is the central banks will print $150 trillion. They'll give it to the private equity guys who will buy up all the real estate while we're using the climate change rules to push you off the land. And the Fed accounts, which can shut down your money. You know, it's basically the takeover. It's the continuation of the centralization. But this time they're coming after all the real estate.
But just for a second, you drive around a lot. You've driven around a lot in the U.S. Just imagine, okay, you see those big power lines? not the little local ones, but the big ones, you know, the football field size with, you know, 4 or 8 lines. Just imagine those all around the country being bound up together. They're wound up in like a single cable. And then you take that cable and you're going to route it under an ocean. That's a few trillion dollars right there. So no, I think that these proposals are being floated for a way to just gin up projects for spending.
Could be. It could be. I don't know if you've seen the Japanese plans to build solar plants in the suborbital platform, which question is okay. How you beam it down.
How much does that cost?
How do you beam it down?
Right. Energy transfer is problematic.
Well, yeah. Putin's just sitting there pumping out gas and thinking this is going to be good.
I just see this stuff. I'm like, I worked in engineering. Like that. Do you understand what you're saying? Anyway, let's go to the next one. G20. What did the world leaders agree to at the summit in Rome? And this is a good piece by The Guardian because they just go topic by topic. Okay, so climate change, they kind of dialed back the goal. They were going to limit the goal of warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, pledged an action against dirty coal plants, but fell short of a target of zero emissions. Okay, so they're still after that by 2050. Taxation.
Right, and you know, Russia and China aren't there.
No.
Right.
Leaders on taxation put their seal of approval on an agreement that will subject multinationals to a minimum 15% tax as part of an effort to, you know, build rainbows and unicorns and a more stable and fair international tax system. Okay, vaccines, of course, they all are, you know, goal of vaccinating at least 40% of the world's population by 2021 and 70% by the middle of next year. Wow, that's a pretty ambitious, and so on and so forth. So you get the idea. There's a lot of goal setting. There's a lot of meddling.
Do you have the I think you had the picture. Yeah, I just want a picture because the optics were very clear. First of all, everybody flew into COP26 and G20 in Rome on their private jets.
Right.
So there were apparently over 400 private planes flying in to show you how concerned they are about the carbon footprint. That was number one. Then you had all the leaders maskless, but all the staff had to wear masks.
Yeah, let's go to that picture.
Okay, let's go to that picture.
Here we go. Here's the picture.
You see that? Are slaves. We are the boss.
So look at the lower left. I'm going to try to zoom in on that. And you can see they kind of got Biden. You know, they're like, we need some distance between you and the next guy. Everybody else is crammed in, and Biden's like, anyway. But you
can
see.
Isn't that strange?
No mask, no mask, no mask, and then mask and mask. And then, you know, so some animals are more equal than other animals, just in case you hadn't figured that out yet. Here is the G20 to rub that in your face so you get
it. Right.
Anyway.
So it was a pretty depressing image projected by both COP26 and the G20. And to me, their clear message is one of hubris. We don't care what you think.
Right.
Right.
We don't care.
We don't care.
In fact, it's really, we want you to know that you wear muzzles and we don't.
So one of the things I thought was really important was this G20 meeting was in Rome. And of course, last year we saw a central banker become the president of Italy when Rome and Italy are leading this. So we have a central banker, Draghi, former head of the ECB, running this meeting. And what you're really looking at in the planning is the, you know, we've talked about the central bankers taking over the fiscal house. Now they're rolling out, you know, a much deeper bureaucratic and administrative agenda on the fiscal side that matches what they're trying to do with the, you know, so it's basically they're rolling out the control grid and they're controlling both monetary and fiscal. And now they're going really deep into the bureaucracy.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And it's all run by a central banker, Draghi.
Mario Draghi. So your subscriber knows, he came from Goldman Sachs, and he was also the head of the Financial Stability Board in the Bank for International Settlements. He immediately preceded Mark Carney. Draghi is a connected guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to next story. This is from Zero Hedge. Here's everything America gets for $1.2 trillion in infrastructure spending, including the crazy stuff. Let's just zoom down. I'm going to roll down here because this picks up something that I brought up earlier. It's this paragraph here. So to help pay for the roughly $550 billion in new spending, more than $200 billion in unused coronavirus relief funds will be repurposed. And that, Catherine, is what we saw yesterday when we looked at the Treasury, daily Treasury summary report. Usually they keep that account low, at a low number. So it's weird to see it elevated kind of at a $200 billion level net, but that solves that mystery. That's what that is. But anyway, you have all these projects that are going to be, you know, implemented to build out infrastructure in the U.S. to improve roads and bridges. $110 billion, public transit, you know, $39 billion to modernize this and that. Amtrak, which I'm in favor of because I'm going to take Amtrak. I take it frequently. With $66 billion earmarked for high-speed rail safety improvements and grants, I'm not really liking this. It's going to modernize the rail route between Washington, D.C. and Boston. How about improve the bathrooms in the regular cars? Can you do that? anyway, so the infrastructure spending, I don't really have that much of a problem with infrastructure spending because it's spending on people.
Well, you know, but you know, that money could go for infrastructure spending that would be great for the country. It can also go to infrastructure spending that just builds out the control grid. Because we're looking at two things. We're looking at a desire to use an electrical grid and a smart grid to control people at a very granular level. That's number one. And that's at the heart of the central banker's financial control grid. They can't implement their control grid until the hardware is built out. Right. So as they're moving to do the CBDCs, they need the fiscal side to build out the hardware. That's what I talked about when I talked about the riots and the opportunity zones. They need the hardware built out. So you're looking at the building out of the control grid. You're also looking at building out significant automation. So, you know, we talked yesterday about driverless trucks. You're watching significant investment go into driverless truck companies or someone like Volvo doing significant investment in driverless trucks. But I'll bet you dimes to donuts that a lot of that infrastructure spending on highways is to get more and more road lines ready for driverless trucks. So, you know, if you're a trucker and you're paying taxes, you're basically paying your taxes to finance an infrastructure that's going to put you out of business, and those new venture companies are going to make a fortune. So I showed you
you're paying for the rope that'll be used to hang you.
Right. Right. Yeah. Now that automation is coming because if you look at an economy, it doesn't make sense for people to drive trucks around if you can do it automatically. So I think there's, you know, an argument to be made. But if you look at the supply shortages, a lot of the supply shortages have been driven by messing with the trucks. So we saw that great article in Medium about the trucks not able to get into the port in Los Angeles and giving up and going, you know, and refusing to go pick up. That's the kind of thing you do when you want to get an agreement for automation of driverless trucks. In other words, you get the transportation system so it can no longer rely on the truckers, and then you've got your argument for automation. Meantime, you've got the money coming in for the hardware to make that automation go.
Right.
So I think just like we're watching a huge budget cut, we're watching a huge hidden push for automation in the economy. And
very interesting.
Right.
And that goes, let's just cut to a chart. You want to?
Yeah. Yeah.
Here we go. This is the chart.
So I thought I'd take a look. PAVE is one of the ETF infrastructure, so it's U.S. Infrastructure Development. And I wanted to see how PAVE was, you know, or an infrastructure ETF was trading against the market. And let me just get out my copy here because it's hard to see it on
screen. Well, let's punch through the, I've got the PAVE is up 90%. What's, so that's so the, on the right.
Now, remember, this is up since the going direct reset was voted on.
Okay.
Okay.
So that PAVE is the first one, and then there's three more.
Right. Right. And then I chose several stocks from the sort of the infrastructure. Okay. One is CAT. Which one is?
Yep. Caterpillar.
Yeah. Caterpillar is up 86%.
Yep.
Then the next one is the S&P.
Right.
So you can see they're significantly, the infrastructure, the key infrastructure stocks are running way ahead of S&P. And that's because, again, building out this automated smart grid is, you know, it's a big investment. We're not even looking at the 5G. And then you've got Vulcan Materials.
Yeah.
Which is, has had quite a rise in the last month or two. But since 2019, up 46%. So infrastructure stocks now doing well, and they got quite a rise on this bill. You know, you could tell by looking at how the stocks are trading. The market wasn't clear that it was going to pass in the beginning of October. So we get quite a rise when it does.
Okay, so let's go to the next chart. And this is Canadian Pacific Railway.
Right. So Canadian Pacific Railway,
there's a map with this one, I got to say, on the right. So anyway.
Yeah. So you have the Canadian Pacific Railway on the right, and then you have Kansas City Southern at the bottom.
Right.
And Kansas City Southern has been the target of acquisition by the two Canadian railways. And it looks like Canadian Pacific is going to win the day. KSU.
Based on the price, you're saying. The market is sniffing out KSU as the winner.
No, based on the board is flipped back and forth, and they finally come out on Canadian Pacific. And the merger hasn't been affected yet, so it's still publicly trading, but it's expected to. So basically what you're watching here is a lot of action by the arbitrageurs. Anyway, so that's why Kansas Southern is, you know, outperformed not just the S&P and PAVE, but you can see Union Pacific up 52%.
Right.
If you look at the map, and the reason I wanted to have the map is you're talking about building a juggernaut through the heartland between Mexico and Canada. And I think this is all part of building an integrated sort of Northern American Union trading complex. When you drive that area, what you'll see is a lot of the highway infrastructure and building for the last, I would say, 15 years has been designed to build towards those automated trucks. But if you take the railroad complex and the automated truck complex through this, you're just going to have an unbelievable, highly economic transportation route, you know, integrating the North American Union. So my expectation is this happens, and it comes with huge automation, both on the railroads and the highways.
Wow.
Well, this is why the fight over New Orleans is so huge. I mean, we've seen a war for the last 30 years as to who's going to control the port of New Orleans. And that's because, you know, you're watching the Mississippi River come down the middle of the country. And it's astonishing, John, how much, you know, how much GDP rolls in and out of that, of the port in the Great Mississippi.
I was just, funny you say that. I was just looking at the southwest corner of Lake Michigan and saying, gosh, it looks like Chicago is a choke point. How very interesting.
Yeah, Chicago's been a choke point for over 100 years.
Yeah, it's been.
Yeah. Right, it's the commodities capital. There's a reason the commodities market trades in Chicago.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, let's keep going.
Very interesting charts. Next story is about interest rates. So higher interest rates may crash the market by 60%, says Stephanie Pomboy.
Yeah, now
cut to this.
I think the central bankers can keep interest rates relatively low. They can't keep inflation low, but they can keep interest rates relatively low. But Pomboy is a very capable financial analyst, and she disagrees with that.
Yeah, and I want to roll just maybe a minute of this YouTube video. Hopefully it rolls without an ad.
Uh-huh.
But I know if you let YouTube sit there on your computer for a while and you go back to it, you get the ad again. So hopefully we won't get that. So let's just see. Here we go.
The Federal Reserve just announced it will start tapering its monthly bond purchases later this month. What's the worst that could happen?
The potential for a sharp backup in rates that, you know, Fed isn't prepared for and the markets are definitely not prepared for seems very real to me.
Yeah, so you know, I've told everybody Rambis put forward the bull case on the stock market in the third quarter Chartology, but Pomboy does a really good job of laying out the bear case. And she's looking more at fundamentals than just charts, but it was a very interesting, you know, if you want, we, in the third quarter equity overview, we focused on how to do a hedge on your equity portfolio. And, you know, I mean, my tiny equity portfolio is hedged. I would not want to be in this market without a hedge. So if you look at the fundamentals, it's terrible.
Yeah. You know, the problem with widespread illegality is it really, it kills legitimate betting.
There's no floor to the bubble. You know, it's like, watch out below.
Well, you can't trust the rules. It's like, well, if you win too much money, then the house is going to change
the rules. Yeah, but you can't trust the rules and you can't trust the prices. Right?
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's double blind. It's like, I'll take a pass. I'll bet on myself.
Right. Right.
Okay. Next story. This one is an interesting story. Let's cut to it. We knew this was kind of coming. The Wall Street Journal. Fed's Quarles will resign at the end of the year. Now, I've had a problem with the Journal for a while just due to its bad writing. This takes it to the next level. Not the writing, but the content. Quarles will resign at the end of the year. So you're like, well, what's going on? So the story here is that he's right now, he was appointed in October of 2017 by Donald Trump, okay? And he was appointed as Fed's Vice Chairman for Bank Supervision, a position created in 2010. So that's coming to an end. That's a four-year position you just saw. It's going to end in October 2021. It's already ended. But nevertheless, his seat on the Fed's Board of Governors would have allowed him to remain as a governor until 2032. So he's resigning, okay? Now, because the vice chair position is ending, so is his position on the Financial Stability Board in Basel, Switzerland. That's going to expire also as a result of the expiry of his position as vice chairman.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's what the journal is saying, that's why he's resigning. And I thought Catherine and I talked about Quarles on Money and Markets, and I went back and I was like, yeah, we did. It was back in September. He was one of the guys caught up with another guy, Kaplan, in trading.
Right.
While the Fed is making these purchases.
Right.
So you're telling me that his trading and the brouhaha over that had nothing to do with, I mean, come on, Wall Street Journal, at least acknowledge that there was a problem with the trading.
So
they don't even admit it. They're just like, oh, no, it's just because his position's up. That's all.
So
that's all it is.
So true, there's a problem with the trading. But if you look at his history and what his net worth is, would you want to be in that position next year?
No.
And would you want to put your family's net? If you knew what he knew, would you want your family's reputation and net worth to be at risk in the general, you know, in front of the general population when the next year of events unfold?
I would want to get out of Dodge.
I'd want to get my family to an island somewhere.
Right.
And I would want to get as deep down and as far away from the center as possible.
Right.
Now, if you look at...
But the journal's not talking about that either. The journal's just like, oh, it's just a completely functional thing. The chair position is expired, his board of governors, and he's just leaving.
I'll bet you, I'd be very curious to see if Quarles and his family enters into their prepper phase.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't bet on the Wall Street Journal covering that either.
No way. Okay.
You know, all right. Last story, I think, in FedWatch. This is actually, we've categorized it as CBDC and crypto. It really doesn't matter. But it's our favorite governor in the whole world, Mark Carney. Yay. COP26, Carney's $130 trillion, you were right, $130 trillion climate pledge is too big to be credible. Now, this is an unbelievable bit of spin here by the Financial Times. Okay, it's not that this is this ridiculous project. It's that the amounts are wrong. So, according to the Financial Times, here you go. The bigger an estimated number, the lower its reliability. The over $130 trillion of capital committed to net zero by the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero proves the point. The group of banks, fund managers, and insurers is led by Mark Carney, former governor of the Bank of England, has admirable intentions. It's all admirable, but its expansive use of statistics is unwise. Do you believe that? So it's not that this whole thing is a confiscation scheme.
Right.
To the tune of $100 trillion. It's just like you're throwing around numbers that are too big. They're not credible. It's a great idea, but you can't tell people, you can't promise them something as wonderful as $130 trillion. That's too big a birthday cake to promise the kids. You need to dial it back a little bit.
Well, it's interesting, you know, if you look at the adjustments at DOD as of 2020, they were up to $90 trillion.
$90 trillion.
Yeah. And we couldn't prove that they were undocumented, so we never used the number. But they were up to $90 trillion, so it's getting close.
That is a strange confluence of numbers.
Now, here's what's interesting. Because remember, the missing money in 2017 was $21 trillion, and the debt was $21 trillion. So if you go to the debt clock, and everybody should go to the debt clock if you want sort of an insight into what John's talking about when he said the debts, you know, we're in a debt problem. Right. I think the debt is approaching $30 trillion. So when Mark Carney talks about $130 trillion to redo the planet, the U.S., for all the wars, all the programs from the beginning of, from 1776 on, is $30 trillion of debt. So right. He's talking about more than four times that to give you a sense of scale.
And the $30 trillion, though, that doesn't include the discounted cash flow evaluation or the payments that are coming due in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
Right.
Right?
Right. So you can take that up to $200 trillion.
Right.
But it's not going to be available for nursing homes because we're going to spend it on climate change.
Right. Yeah, granny's got to freeze because, you know, we need new solar panels in India.
There you go.
Anyway. Okay, let's keep it going.
We had a coin chart. We're going to do the coin chart.
Coin chart, yeah. Let's hit the coin chart.
So Coinbase went public this year.
Let me see. Here we go. Coin chart. You got it.
So they just went public. So they're publicly traded, and what we can see is when infrastructure took off, so did coin. I've mapped it here against the gold ETF. So as you can see that rise in October.
Yeah.
So gold is down there in the basement. And all of a sudden in October. Now, what's interesting, I haven't been able to confirm it, but some of the reports said that the infrastructure package required currency reports, you know, 10,000 or more trades had to be reported to the IRS. So I haven't been able to confirm if that's true or not. Anyway, but there's no doubt that the crypto guys are feeling good.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Right.
That chart that's an eye-opener. That's a major rise. And it's, wow. I think I might know where that's coming from, but I can't lay it out right now. But I want to back up. We went to cover a story in FedWatch about GM temporarily shutting down plants in the U.S. You want to hit that?
Right. Let's so we this. Get this reports from all over. We get it from Ford. We get it from Chrysler. We get it from GM that they're shutting down. And the reason given is that there's a shortage of chips. Now, I believe that is absolutely happening, because if you look at the pressure that the smart grid is putting on chip manufacturing, it's enormous. So
yeah,
if you're planning, if you're the central bankers and you want to automate and get all that hardware into place, you need, it's unfathomable to me how many chips you need. So a chip shortage is not an issue. At the same time, I think the economy is really, nosediving. And that may be another reason, and it's air cover to say it's the chips, as opposed to just start cutting back production because the sales aren't there.
Could be.
Right. Right. But it's something, keep an eye on it. Keep an eye on the auto manufacturing.
It is the age of air cover.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So this is a local news story. Let's hit it. Here we go.
And we're back with more breaking news, this time about a major American automaker stopping down production as car prices are already sky high. Tom Costello joins us now. And Tom, at the core of this, these automakers say they are low on computer chips critical to make these cars.
Yeah, Tom, good evening. General Motors temporarily shutting down most of its North American plant operations this month because of that worldwide computer chip shortage. We're told SUV and truck models most likely will be affected by all of this. GM following similar announcements from Ford, Nissan, and Toyota. Asian chip factories have been hit hard by the COVID Delta variant, forcing some factories to close, and that's led to a shortage of both new and used vehicles, sending car prices even higher, hitting a record price average in August of $41,000. Anyone who needs a new car may find very few options in the weeks ahead, potentially meaning even higher prices on dealer lots.
So there you go.
So it's not inflation. It's not inflation. It's not that central bankers printing money. It's the magic virus.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. It's always the virus. The virus raised. The virus lowered the interest rates. The virus pumped all the money into the retail monetary circuit. The virus.
Right. The virus shut down the small business. The virus is laying people off on Maxine Band-Aids. Right. It's just
right.
The magic virus.
It shut down mom and pop, but let Walmart go. It shut down churches and bars. But it allows climate summits. It's amazing virus. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, the age of air cover is I think it's got a lot of, it's got a lot of legs,
Okay.
Okay. Let's go shift to space, military, global turf wars. The next chart, this is from the Visual Capitalist. You sent this. I was like, what's this? And I looked at it. I was like, what is this? Wow. Okay. Okay, so this is a regional breakdown of millennials around the world, visualizing millennials. Take a look at Asia versus the U.S.
Right.
Really, Asia versus North America.
Right.
76 million millennials in North America, 1.1 billion in Asia.
Right.
Whoa.
Well, it's interesting because my generation, John, has always lived in a world where the American consumer was the center of the consumer world. And of course, that shifted, after the fiscal crisis, and it shifted first and foremost to Asia because you could see Apple was getting more downloads from Asia than from, the U.S. and Europe combined. But here you see, if you're a consumer product company, or a politician, the market has moved.
That's just an amazing. Those numbers are staggering.
Right. That's why, for those of you who haven't gone back and read The Rise of the Asian Consumer, I spent a huge amount of time writing that, and I had constantly talked about this shift to Asia and the rising power of Asia. And what was interesting is when I published it and people read it, it really kind of knocked them off their chair because they really hadn't computed it. They hadn't really realized how big this was.
Boy, we're gonna have to put wasps on the endangered species list, I think. look at those numbers.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep.
That's an interesting chart you said.
Right.
Okay. Next story. Let's go to it. This is what is going on in this one. This is horrifying. Navy fire. So I'm back in Firefox highlighting works. Navy fires commander of nuclear sub that hit underwater mountain in South China Sea. So U.S. Navy 7th Fleet cited that commanders, plural, have been relieved due to loss of confidence due to this accident. So you can see at least three names here. Connecticut, that's the name of the vessel, commanding officer Al Gilani, and then Lieutenant Commander Patrick Cashin, and Chief of the Boat Corey Rogers were removed from their position at the direction of the U.S. 7th Fleet Commander, Vice Admiral Carl Thomas. The submarine had struck an uncharted seamount, or essentially an underwater mountain, in a precise location that has not been made public. And this is a piece of information the Chinese are seeking. So here's one of the guys who's been relieved. And you go down to the story. Journalist and geopolitical commentator Dave DeCamp has pointed out, quote, the U.S. recently deployed a spy plane designed to detect radioactive debris to the South China Sea, a signal that Washington, the accident was severe enough for the U.S. to think it released nuclear materials.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's, that, I mean, nuclear sub with, and now I'm not clear from that quote, the timing of the accident versus the U.S. sending the reconnaissance plane
right.
with nuclear detection capability on it. But I'm assuming that Zero Hedge got it right. That's really alarming. That's very disturbing.
Well, here's
and no wonder China wants to know. What did you just do?
Well, here's the question. Was this a snafu, or was this electronic warfare?
That sounds like good old fashioned blocking and tackling warfare to me. Like, we're, you know, just run the sub into the, I don't know. I mean,
you know, if
I don't know.
If it was just an accident, that's much more frightening than if there was a warfare component to this. But
there's no good interpretation of that story,
right,
is there?
Because what it implies is the Navy is the U.S. Navy is no longer the supreme backer of the U.S. currency. And we lose the South China Sea, that's it, it's over. And that's what this is signaling. And this is, I think, the third or fourth major accident that the Navy has suffered in the last 3 years in the South China Sea. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we had stories like this for a while in brand illusion, but something else is going on.
Right. That one makes me nervous. But if you look at how many underground bases are being built, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a lot of uncharted mountains in the ocean these days.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Unregistered mountains.
Right.
This one wasn't on the Atlas. Where did this come? Okay, next story. 7 lawsuits challenging COVID vaccine mandates for U.S. military members. This is from The Defender. This is a nice, again, nice compendium of stories. And so they go through the stories. I'll tell you, I'll just handicap these stories as an attorney and a litigator of which ones I think are probably good and which ones probably are not going to last very long.
Okay.
Anyway, here we go. Okay. Number one, Children's Health Defense Fund versus FDA. Lead attorney there, Barnes,
right.
Who's Robert Barnes. Actually, he subscribes to my YouTube channel for whatever reason. This one's not going to work because this is going to get dismissed for lack of standing. So what they're saying is they're challenging the Food and Drug Administration's approval of Pfizer's Comirnaty's COVID vaccine. According to the lawsuit, the FDA violated federal law when it licensed one thing and is it mandating another. Problem with that lawsuit is Children's Self-Defense. The court's going to say you weren't injured.
Right.
What's your injury?
Right.
They're going to throw that out. That one's not going to last long. Okay, let's go to some ones that are a little bit better. John Doe, Jane Doe versus DOD, et cetera. 16 active duty military service members in support of their right to refuse unconstitutional, unlawful COVID vaccine mandate. They asked the court to bar the FDA and Department of Defense from using deceptive bait and switch tactics to uphold the constitutional right of every citizen to refuse an unwanted vaccine. Bait and switch involves the FDA's approval of Comirnaty's vaccine, which is not available while FDA and DOD instead seek to administer experimental, unproved version of the vaccine, which cannot be mandated. Right. So this one ultimately rests on your constitutional rights. This one has a much better chance of surviving than the first one. This lawsuit looks like it has merit. Number three, Robert and Mulvihill versus DOD. Two active duty service members seek a temporary restraining order. This was actually granted already. In this case, they want to restrain the DOD from the vaccine mandate based on prior COVID infections naturally acquired immunity. And they say, hey, you know, this regulation has a longstanding exemption for vaccines when service members demonstrate natural immunity with serological testing. But in an unprecedented unilateral decision, the Defense Secretary Austin redefined immunity by vaccine only and thereby denies science and the validity of natural immunity in a new policy of vaccine mandate. That has a much better chance of success because it involves somebody, namely the Defense Secretary, making an arbitrary and very capricious decision.
Right.
That one's probably going to last. This one, this next one, number four, is already won. The TRO was granted on October 29th in favor of military and federal employees.
Mm-hmm.
Basically for refusing just a blanket refusal of any religious accommodations for the vaccine. And the court went with the plaintiffs there. So that one's already on the right track. Costin versus Biden. This is DOD falsifying medical records with Comirnaty for service members who received BioNTech. That sounds good. I mean, anytime you get into falsifying records, you get into fact issues, which is going to prolong the case and it's going to have merit. It'll get to a jury because it's a fact issue. But if you look at they're saying you falsified medical records, but when you look at the evidence they cite, there's nothing in there. You should see, when you see this falsifying medical records, you should see a paragraph that starts out with on information and belief, defendants falsified records. You don't see that anywhere here. So this one, I'm not clear on this one. That's a no bet. Navy SEALs versus Biden challenges blanket refusal of religious combinations. Okay, again, blanket refusal of religious combinations. You're probably going to win on that one.
Right.
Especially Navy SEALs.
Right.
Okay, another second Navy SEALs versus DOD. Navy has a written policy that discharged SEALs can be required to pay back costs of years of training. So this one has the flavor of ex post facto, like, hey, you didn't tell us it was going to cost us up front. You know, if we did X, Y, and Z, you could charge us for our training. But I don't see any allegations anyone here to that effect. So I don't really know. But it sounds meritorious.
Right.
Anyway, those are
they're reneging. I mean, they're basically switch hitting the deal retroactively. I just think that's an abrogation of contract.
Yeah, so the meets and bounds of that lawsuit aren't clear is well, what's your legal theory?
Right.
That sounds like you got a case, but I haven't seen it articulated to a degree
so
where I think.
So I wanted to mention
that it might
after we finalized, Corey Diggs published an article that we sponsored. So I'll sponsor Corey writing something that we want to see get written. And she wrote something on how to track all the legal cases on related to the mandates and COVID-19. Anyway, right. So that's, you can link to it from our website. We also published a letter by somebody wrote a letter to Coles in Australia challenging the mandates, and it's a doozy. That one is up there as well.
You want to cut to that? We can do that.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Let's get to.
Let me bring that up. Here you go. Open letter to Coles Group. Anyway, so it's on the website. This is an open letter to Coles seeking answers to the following questions relating to the jab mandate that management is imposing on all of its employees without regard to consent or exemptions in individual health circumstances. And you could just see here the questions right here. You know, they're on, you know, Solari right there if you want to see the letter.
Right. And it just shows you, because I don't think there's a company in the world that can answer a serious set of questions about this.
Right.
Right.
Right. I don't either.
So I just saw a headline and I didn't have the time enough to try and understand what it was about, but it said Biden was trying to consolidate. First of all, he said he was going to ignore the TRO that said he had to delay on the employee mandates. And so they're just going to ignore the courts. How does that work? I don't know how that works. But anyway, he said he was going to ignore the courts and proceed anyway. But
ask Nixon how that worked out for him.
Good point. But the other thing, it said he wanted to consolidate them all into one case. Now, I don't know how you could possibly do that because they're all coming at it on different angles. But, you know, to me, consolidate into one place is put it in one place where the intelligence agencies control and get whatever they want.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. Sweep one big body under the rug.
Well, but I don't see how the Supreme Court would ever permit, if that was challenged, consolidating all of them into one lawsuit.
I don't. For the reason you just articulated.
Right.
It's got different theories in one case for different parties. Usually, if you're consolidating cases, it's because there's one theory. You were negligent spreading napalm. Okay. It's one injury. Your skin's burned. You got cancer. And there's one place where it happened. It was Vietnam. Then you've got a mass action, you know, and if it's spread out, maybe you got a class action. But what you're talking about is just a hodgepodge.
Right.
You can't consolidate that.
I don't know how you could, but anyway, that's what he said.
So the seven cases, by the way, that falls under the category of pushback. And in the next pushback, we've got a woman, Lisa Johnson, on Julian Assange. So let's cut this and listen to this video. Here we go.
Well, it's a real honour to be here to help launch this film about John Shipton's quest to free his son, Julian Assange. But by the same token, it's a disturbing sign of the times that any father would have to be devoting his life to defending his son's right to tell the truth. Because we all, of course, raise our children to believe that telling the truth is right and that killing is wrong. Yet here we are, leaving them a world where those who do the killing are above the law and those who tell the truth about it are punished and persecuted. For Julian Assange, Chelsea Manning, David McBride, Stephen Donziger. You know, I could keep going, and of course the countless people who are censored, fired, smeared, attacked for daring to question the official narrative of the day. So the Assange precedent is everywhere, and it's dangerous. Because the case against Julian Assange is all about creating a world where those in power can kill and destroy and do it in secret and do it with impunity and crush anyone who tries to hold them to account. Just like they're crushing Julian Assange in Belmarsh prison right now. And John Shipton said recently, very eloquently, that the case against Julian is not held up by the law, it's held up by force. And it's a legal Frankenstein's monster of abuses of power, all stitched up together, lurching around the globe. You know.
Anyway,
good speech.
Okay, so we get the point there. Yeah. The next clip. This gets my vote. For the pushback of the week. This is where's this from? Belarus.
Ah.
It's the Belarusian.
You know. Ladies and gentlemen, be prepared. Now, we haven't looked at the inflation chart. Will we do that after this?
That's last. Okay. That's the last thing we'll cover.
Okay.
This is the last video. We have one last chart.
Get ready to fall in love.
But this this guy wants to know what is going on in his cabinet. He is not happy. You don't need to hear it that well, and the resolution is bad, but the captions, it's not in English. Captions tell you everything you need to know. Okay, here we go.
Вы их на карантин посадили перед встречей с президентом, ПЦР-тесты сделали?
Нет.
А как-то так, вы пришли к главе государства, к президенту, а он же один в Беларуси, и не проверили здесь присутствующих. Что это за отношение к тому, в чем вы меня постоянно убеждаете? Я не зря вам задал этот вопрос, Дмитрий Леонидович, вы правильно сделали, потому что у нас это не принято. Хотя во всем мире к президенту люди не заходят без карантина, я не говорю проверены. Я это специально задал вопрос, чтобы задать следующий вопрос. Если вы к президенту свободно заходите, так зачем же вы издеваетесь над людьми? У меня действительно ни один человек никогда не приходил в намордниках, не спрашивал у него, вакцинирован, нет, ПЦР-тесты не делали. Ну, одна Качанова возмущала всегда, как так, президенту идут, но она ответственна по Минску, а Дворец независимости в Минске, она всегда возмущалась. Ну, повозмущается и сама уже приходит без тестирования. А почему людей тогда напрягаем? Почему подняли гвалт на всю страну? Почему милицию мобилизовали на проверки масочного режима, щупаете везде, даже женщин не щадя? А где этот министр? Я же вас предупреждал. Вам что, нечем заниматься? Вы почему закон нарушаете? У нас нет закона такого, который дает вам право ощупывать, осматривать и ловить людей и снимать намордники. Вы кому подыгрываете? Так уже если лечите, то лечите как следует. Начиная от этой зоны и заканчивая везде на улицах, Дмитрий Леонидович. Подняли бучу на всю страну. Я думаю, губернаторы нас услышали. А то вот я смотрю, в Бресте уже штрафовать начали и уже силой коленом на грудь заставляют вакцинироваться. Я же вас просил.
Anyway, I love that. Kachanova's the only one who ever had a problem.
Well, you notice.
But she doesn't have a problem now. And the camera cuts to her. She doesn't have her muzzle on.
Right. So this is a president who's really irritated with Pfizer, whomever, giving kickbacks into his cabinet behind his back and controlling policy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Whom are you playing to? He
right.
says.
Right.
The other point I love is that, you know, if you're doing it out in the street, do it here.
Right.
Okay. We're no different than out there. How is it you're telling these people that need to do X, Y, and Z, and yet you come here, you no PCR test, no muzzle, nothing.
Right. But this underscores what we've said before. There's a real sovereignty issue. This comes down to sovereignty.
It does.
And the president's basically saying, you guys are running around and doing something without my approval. No sovereignty.
Right. Yeah, you answer to me. You don't answer to Pfizer.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap it up with our favorite chart all the time. Here we go.
I just got an email from the Wall Street Journal saying inflation has now hit a 30-year high. Now, I want you to know they've managed to sit on... You know, if you look at real household cost of goods, inflation has been rip-roaring for years. You know, if you just look, like, you go look at the Chapwood Index, the average basket of household goods for the last 10 years has been going up 8 to 14%, depending on which part of the country you're on. That's serious inflation.
The significance, though, of the 30-year number is that puts it in 1991,
right?
And remember, the hedonic adjustments started in 92.
Right.
So they're saying 30-year highs is a meaningful number.
Right. Well, anyway, and if you look at this chart, you know, it's serious.
Yeah.
And now...
Yeah, oats leading the way again, 98%.
Right.
Right.
So we're seeing coffee, cotton, sugar, you know, wheat... Corn. These are big jumps in the core prices of food.
Let me get the right color here down to the bottom. So what is the VIX doing down here?
It's minus 19.54%, which means the market expects the Fed put to work every time. So they're not taking Jay Powell seriously about the taper.
Right. That's exactly what that means.
Right.
You got it.
Right.
And as usual, you know, you have all your energy all down to about here, you know. That's not a good sign. But, you know, oats was at the top last week, too.
Right.
Well, and all of these are above, you know, the rip-roaring Dow Jones.
Right.
This is, you know, again, it seems like months that this has just been one huge tundra of green.
Right. And I think,
a few outliers on red.
I think we have a lot higher chance during the winter of it getting worse, not better.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you heard what the Chinese said. Make sure you have 3 weeks of food.
I got to heed that advice myself. Right. By the way, I did a couple of presentations that I uploaded. I don't know if you can make them available.
Yeah, so we had promised to have them up by Thursday when this runs. So you should assume that they're – let me just check the website and see if they're up yet. So we have one of them in Soleri in the news, but we'll have commentaries up with both presentations. So we've got Central Banks Control Everything is up in Soleri in the news, and we're going to have all the others up in the commentaries.
One presentation was pre-recorded for Red Pill Expo. The other presentation was for American Monetary Institute. That was my first ever live presentation where it was sort of like this, where it's cameras on me and I'm cutting from me to charts and video and back. I was very nervous doing that because I'd never done it before. But it came off without a hitch.
Oh, good.
So I got to thank you, Catherine, for doing this because no way does that happen. And they were blown away when I did it. They're like, wow, this is really high production value.
Yeah.
Like, thank you.
Thank you, John. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going to happen in the next week, but I look forward to talking with you then.
To me as well. See you in a week.
Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night and a great week. Bye.